Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I am Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is located at 3201 North Division Street inside the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza, which is a very high-quality building that we moved into back in 06, and it's got a 80-foot clock tower. It's located a couple miles north of the interstate, and it, as I said, it's one of the finest facilities nationwide. We offer our clientele the highest-rated privately held depository service in the western region to store your metals. We did that years ago when I built it. People would come in and buy a bunch of stuff and say, now what do I do with it? And we'd refer them to buy vaults and safes, and you're welcome to do that. But if you don't want that, we have our rates are very good. I mean, the vaults basically start out at $65 a year and up from there. We've got some massive ones that you can almost put a body in. Not that we would ever allow that. But, you know, they get a little expensive. You're talking a few $100 a year. But, I mean, literally, they're very, very sizable. And we do have a lot of clientele that have those full. We have some clients that have three of those full. But it's a lot safer and less expensive than buying a vault in your house. If you do put a vault in your house, safe. It's all relative to the amount of value that you currently have invested. If you're, you know, over six figures, you want a good, at least a TL-15 rated safe that you don't get from brands like Liberty, things, you know, or Cabela's especially, none of those kinds of things. The gun safes technically keep the honest, and they're easy to peel apart. Anybody who knows anything about safes, I happen to, can take those apart pretty relatively quickly. You get into better quality stuff. I've explained that in the past, how they come up with the ratings. The TL-15 means tools something 15 minutes, but that's people in a warehouse with massive heavy-duty equipment, everything they ever wanted. Two men, 15 minutes to get in with, you know, jackhammers and, you know, plasma cutters, everything. They don't have to worry about cops. They don't have to work around walls. They don't have to, you know, encroach tiny spaces and look for 220 power. That's the whole thing. A TL-15, they say technically is about an 8-hour process in your home. TL-30, they say 16 to 20 hours. Not going to happen. Typically, you'd have to have someone camped out there forever. And then that's with heavy, heavy equipment, which most don't have. Most people that come, you know, to break into your house, they're not going to have that stuff. And what's even as or more important is that these are anchor bolted to a floor, typically a concrete floor. There are ways to anchor bolt to a joist floor. I've helped people do it, and, you know, there's big lag bolts you put down and huge steel plates, and then you basically cut off and solder the tops of the bolts so they can't be unscrewed, and it's, you know, it works. It definitely works. I know I helped one person put one in, and they actually got robbed when they were out of the country, and the people were not able to, you know, breach the safe. And also, don't leave your combination in a card on top of the safe. I know of a person who did that as well, and they got lucky. The criminal didn't find it, but it was a little bit risky. So, but if you don't want to go through all that trouble, when you get into TL-rated safes, you know, you're pushing $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, and it's a, you know, you can store your stuff here for a long time. It is pretty much exclusive to our clientele. For a number of reasons, we don't want to, you know, have people storing a variety of things in there. We don't let people store firearms. We don't want people bringing firearms back to the safe deposit box room for obvious reasons. And I did have a situation one time where I had a young lad working here who'd graduated from high school with my son, and it was after hours. And I'd always tell people, you know, it's okay to call after hours. I'm around, you know. Well, he'd hear me say that, and he converted that into, well, you can come in after hours, we're always around. And he didn't bother telling me that two guys had talked to him on the phone, very shady characters, and he'd okayed them to store an arsenal here. I mean, and these guys came in. He let them in the door. There was he and I. I didn't know. I was back in the sorting room, which is all bullet and bomb resistive and everything, but that doesn't matter. And I looked out, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, these guys are tough stuff. They were not a very attractive group, and they had huge duffel bags just packed with heavy artillery and firearms. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I went out, and, you know, I was trying to explain this to them, and they were not overly receptive. It was not a very comfortable situation. And I had a gun in my hand, and I sincerely believe that they had other intentions, and because I was prepared and fairly forthright, I was able to get them out of the building, and it was just not a comfortable situation. So, we don't store guns. I think that makes it fairly clear. So one of my listeners, brought up to me today the situation that has taken place here. I touched on it here a while ago. In Spokane and other areas, this whole situation with the transgender drag queen book readings at public libraries. Spokane was allowing it, and then, you know, they had a big protest, and, you know, we have pictures here of 30 police officers, including snipers on rooftops in Spokane, covering, and I'm not kidding you, I'm trying to find I've got the website here, but I'll try to refer you to it, because I mean it might be this activistmommy.com. There's a few different ones. Absolutely unbelievable. You know, and the bottom line is, you know, we've got this terrible morality issue in this country. I mean, I think you'd all agree. I was thinking about this today, and I was thinking, what would they have done in the past, you know, 20, 40, 60, 80 years? You get to the point where, you know, they may have tolerated some of it just because, but they would have been really irritated, and then they would have banded together and driven them off and said, this is wrong. And that's society's natural regulation of itself, driving away deviant characters and things like that. Now we go the other way. We propagate and placate, okay? I mean, we encourage it, and we, you know, we give them permission. We want to give them all the room they want to do things that we know are biblically wrong. In this nation, you know, we've got Christians that don't know what they believe. They don't know what the Bible is. It's very difficult because people don't carry around Bibles anymore. They've got all this electronic stuff. I study the Bible on the web a lot, but I'll be honest with you, it's different. I have to memorize exact scripture references because I can't flip through my Bible and find it like I used to. And you can't fan through and look at previous chapters as quickly. And it's just different. It's not natural. God gave us the word. Israel, Jews, have the highest IQ by nationality in the world. Okay? Why? Well, they're God's chosen people. Maybe it's genetic. I don't think so. I think it's because they read Hebrew. And I think Hebrew is the ancient Hebrew, especially, is the language of God. It's incredible. Every, like Christ said, every jot and tittle, which, you know, means every line, slash, and dot in Hebrew has a meaning. Okay, every single piece has a meaning where, you know, when they say that Cain receives the mark, it actually breaks down to the point where you have, you know, the crucifixion and all this other stuff written in the actual word for mark. It's pretty phenomenal. It's very, very in-depth and extensive, and I think that it opens up their minds and makes them very intelligent, or increases their intellect. And I don't think anybody out there would find it hard to believe that God's original language for man would do that. And so you know, we don't have the word like we used to, and we've got to be really careful about that. And we really have to make sure that we're reading the word and that we know the word and we memorize the word and we think about the word and we constantly meditate upon it, and that we're, you know, we maintain the fruits of the Spirit, especially gratitude, and, you know, just live in His Spirit so we can see clearly what's going on. The world is coming down on us so hard all the time that we become clouded in our thinking. We don't realize that we deviate. It's kind of the concept of if you put a boat that's going across the ocean, if they're off by half a degree when they leave the U.S., if you take a boat to Japan and you're off by half a degree, you end up basically in New Zealand. You know, and if you hardly know there's a difference, but that's the problem, is we just slightly deviate. You look at Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, and you look at Lot. It's absolutely terrible how immoral he was and why Abraham wanted to save him. I think it ended up being the principle of the thing, because Abraham's kind of like, look, God, they can't be that bad. I mean, every single person can't be corrupted. Well, how'd they get corrupted like that? I mean, it's a real story. It really happened. I mean, I've been there off the Dead Sea. I mean, it's a very parched place, and who knows what came out of the sky or what, you know, God dropped down and burned them up. I don't know, but I'll tell you, that area is nasty. It, you know, it could have had a meteorite full of, you know, we've all, you know, hellfire and brimstone. We've all heard that. Something very hot and sulfuric may have came out of the sky and burned it up, or, you know, we don't know, but that's God's judgment. And Abraham was like, God, there's got to be 50 people. There's got to be 20. You know, he goes down, and finally you get Lot, who ends up, basically trying to give his virgin daughters to terribly, sickly, corrupt homosexuals who say to him, if you don't let us have them, aka the angels, I mean, these guys want to sickly sodomize the angels. They say, we will do worse to you than we would do to them. So they admit what they're doing is filthy, rotten, treacherous, you know, terrorism, essentially. And Lot's willing to give up his daughters. You know, there's something wrong for that. That's not a man. That's a coward. That's a pathetic, weak coward. And I guess the point, I think you get the point I'm making, is that what we've become? We have become ashamed to stand up and defend our beliefs. Oh, it's politically incorrect. Well, we live in an era, isn't it interesting that forever, your parents and my parents grew up in an era where you don't discuss religion, money, or politics ever. And like I tell people, I started my radio show, you know, probably 14 years ago or something like that. And back then, it was on financial issues. And then Obama got in office. And like I tell people, well, originally I discussed economics. But when Obama got in office, it became religion, economics, and politics, all combined into one. Very much like the Antichrist, very much end times. It's the money. You know, Solomon said money is the answer to everything. And, you know, you've got Paul. You look at this stuff with this Jeffrey Epstein, this, you know, conspiracy of his murder, after Clinton. They prove that Clinton says he was with him four times. If you don't know, this is a billionaire who was running basically child sex trafficking. And, you know, all these big names were involved, and they'd fly in his jet to private islands and all this stuff. And Clinton was there, he said, four times. But he never saw any girls. Well, the airport manifesto, private airport, you know, air flight logs technically don't lie. But 40 or 27 times they show that he was with him on these flights. And various flights would say Jeff Epstein or Jeffrey Epstein, William Jefferson Clinton. And then it'd have like Sandy, Mandy, Candy, and Dandy or whatever. Not, you know, not even full names. And so he, you know, this Epstein had too many names. Yeah, he knew too much. And if you've watched the Clinton Chronicles, which is quite old, but, you know, now the tally on deaths is way over 130 of absolute, you know, impossible coincidences, just like Epstein. Guys that are ready to testify or have information. You know, Epstein, they moved his roommate out the night before. They took him off suicide watch at a prison, which is never, ever done. The people that work there, supervisors and everything, have been interviewed, and they're like, this is nuts. We've never seen this before. So they remove his roommate. The next day, the prison guards are supposed to be watching him at the minimum every 30 minutes, but more like every 15. They falsify the documents. Oh, by the way, the cameras were off during the incident over that day, which normally are always on. And the prison guards lie and say that they did check on him. They falsified records. Well, they got other video from other areas that they would have had to pass through. No evidence of them ever passing through, so they lied. And then Jeffrey Epstein he supposedly hangs himself, but his neck is broken in three places. And from professional forensic coroners, numerous, they say basically it's impossible from a hanging to break your neck in three places. They said it's completely consistent with choking to death. So they brought someone in there and choked him to death, hung him, and made it look like a suicide. And there's another Clinton, chalk it up. I mean, you've probably heard of Foster that, so you know, was going to testify, supposedly committed suicide. They found him in Central Park, gun in hand, hole in head, no blood at scene, no bullet. Two other guys that were, you know, on another case, completely separate individuals, died within 2 days of each other, about 4 and 2 days out from trial, both from really suspicious car accidents. You know, it goes on and on. Another individual that was in witness protection, and the marshals that were holding him in protection said they'd been followed. And this guy, the morning of the trial, slips in the shower, hits his head and dies, supposedly, while no one's watching. And it was on an outside window situation where they said the window had been tampered with, they thought. And it just goes on and on and on like this. And I really, you know, it's all conspiracy, but I'm telling you, this is where we've come. These are our leaders. You talk about sexual immorality, right? I mean, this is the corruption that has infiltrated our nation. And then you get Hillary Clinton, and I'll get back to the drag queen thing here in a minute. But you get like Hillary Clinton, who's created, you know, the havoc in this nation about Trump is not created by Trump. This was created strictly by Hillary Clinton. The Democratic Party literally paid for the Steele dossier, and the FBI paid for half of it too. And they have all this documentation from Steele and Comey that, you know, they can't let him in office. They need an insurance policy. So they put out all this fake information, you know, supposedly gathered by an MI6 agent. And they have all this Russia stuff, this terrible, filthy stuff about Trump I'm not even going to repeat. And it goes on and on and on, and they won't let it go. And Hillary's behind it all. Hillary, you know, they proved basically iced Bernie Sanders through Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They, you know, they doctored up a bunch of stuff. And then a bunch of DNC documents were released. That's Democratic National Convention or Committee. And they were released to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks never said who did it or how they did it. But then this guy in D.C. That did it has a, quote, random drive-by shooting and just happens to get killed. Which I was in D.C. after that, and I walked down that exact street, that exact corner, and looked around, and it was the perfect location, you know. And there's no cameras. These people have everything figured out, and you get the picture. The corruption, the level of corruption's deep. Trump means final overriding factor or resource. And I really think that he's our final Trump. He's our final call. That we, this is it. God's giving us one more chance to have a spiritual revival. You watch somebody like Trump comes into office, very candid, very direct, very straightforward about everything, and he becomes a believer in front of, you know, America's national public, basically. He's not ashamed at all, completely skin of leather, just tough. And he's giving us an opportunity to learn how to speak our minds. I mean, people are just appalled. If he was in office 35 years ago, no one would have cared. They'd be like, yeah, this guy's good. No, not now. We have to temper everything we say because everybody has been trained how to not only to be offended, but to capitalize on that offense. And that is the game. When I was really looking into this whole stuff about this drag queen stuff, that, you know, these people are of great offense. You get 500 mom strong that's protesting them. So they have, you know, 500 drag queens strong that are coming back against them. And, you know, and then you end up with the cops and you got, they have this, what they call, you know, I've done very little research on this, but a little bit, they call it queer theory, which, you know, rejects all of our binary standards. So there's no right or wrong, no man or woman, no child or adult, no left or right, only the mindless pursuit of sexual gratification. Rejection of binary opposition is the core of queer theory. The standard bearer for queer theory is the destruction of the female identity. While there are some trans men and the rare female drag queen, the vast majority of queer Marxists are men who present themselves as women. The majority of these men are dressed, well, men in dresses are gay men, but many of them are straight men with deviant sexual fetishes. These men who identify as women have a proclivity to force themselves on lesbian women as well as bully and intimidate their straight girlfriends. Or, as happened in Canada, a man going by the name of Jessica Yanov has tried to force women who work as female Brazilian body waxers to wax his blank, his lady blank. These men pretending to be women are trying to enslave women to do their bidding and appropriate every aspect of female life, even breastfeeding and now uterus transplants. Is that sick? And then it says, traditional Christians, feminists, lesbians, and conservative-leaning gay men are the primary targets of queer theory's political arm. They are bullied, harassed, doxxed, and even violently assaulted, and they give names and examples by queer Marxists like Antifa. Okay? Social media is a safe haven for queer Marxists where they can harass their opponents with impunity, and all those who speak out against them are deplatformed. These queer Marxists will even contact the places of work of people who comment on social media to get them fired, to try to get them fired. In one instance in Spokane, Washington, this is a national article, a woman was fired from her job at an elementary school for mentioning to a co-worker that she was against drag queen story hour at the local library. Unbeknownst to this woman, the principal of the school is a gay man who does drag. When he fired her, he said he was going to have her charged with a hate crime for thinking drag is misogyny and inappropriate for 3 to 8 year olds. What country does he think he lives in? I guess we're really becoming a queer caliphate. And then it goes on. I think you get it. This stuff being battled out. Universities, public schools, libraries, government, bureaucracies, corporations, social media, corporate news complexes, Hollywood, everywhere we look. We are losing this war big time. I think you'd agree. We need to fight back. We need to stand up. We need to speak the truth. We can't be ashamed. It is time for us to take a stand. It's time to take our society back. We've got to stand up for truth. The problem is our platform as conservative believers is shut down. The access to the media is difficult, to put it lightly. Social media will even shut you down and throw you off for hate speech. It's interesting, George Orwell's 1984 that predicted the future nailed all this stuff on the head, and it just seemed foolish. Crazy, you know. I mean, it was unbelievable where they could watch everything. Well, cameras are everywhere, TVs are everywhere. It's unbelievable. And you look back, and Satan keeps trying to duplicate his behavior, like I've said, steal, kill, and destroy is what he does. He takes God's stuff, you know, God's creation, the most beautiful things of marriage and family and morality. But, you know, the thing you got to understand, it all, to me, I mean, obviously the 60s was the precursor to it. The final hard application of this really started under William Jefferson Clinton when he got caught, you know, philandering in the Oval Office. I remember I was in banking then, managing a bank branch, and I remember when this came out and I thought, well, he's done. It's over. That's it. Nope. He lawyered up and fought his way through. Never, no shame. You know, no guilt, no repentance. No, I mean, they always repent for being caught, but he never repented for his actions or behavior. And then everything started to change. It was before that and during that time, they started to do what I call thought policing, speech policing. We started to get told, you know, what we could and couldn't say. We started to have the highly sexual offended movement where women were, you know, offended by a lot of things. And that's all it took. When I was with Bank of America, they had a policy. If you got accused, you were fired. And it got pretty bad for a few years until an individual that I knew got falsely accused by a disturbed female. And he brought a lawsuit against Bank of America and won a massive amount of money, $2 million. And, you know, this was a guy that was making 50 grand a year, and surprisingly, they changed that policy quickly. But it is wrong. It is not the way it's supposed to be. And I'm not saying there's not sexual victims in this society. There's tons of them. We've got extensive amounts of pornography and just, you know, trash, just pure, you know, terrible tearing down of the female. Just it's tearing apart God's creation for marriage. And it is the core and the root of our society. And what I was getting at a minute ago with Clinton was, you know, people say, oh, how he conducts his personal life and his marriage and all that. It has no impact. It has no impact on how he can govern. Well, this right here is showing us these people, this sickness, and that's exactly what it is. It's a complete, total mental deviant disorder. It permeates every aspect of their lives. You know, you get like this Buttigieg. You get these lefty, you know, and I've talked to my share of them that support him. He's gay. I'm sorry. Gay is a sin. People have, you know, rewritten all this stuff about, you know, what was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah? You know, and they say, you know, well, it was that I won't even get into it. They say that they were haughty and detestable and that they weren't good hosts. And they've changed all the scripture. They forget to read certain scriptures that you cannot refute. Even in Romans 1, it just says, you know, these people receive within themselves the punishment for their own sin. In other words, when they engage in these activities, the actual activity itself is a form of punishment, and it's bad, and it's wrong, and it's not right. And, you know, we've got these similarities that have been seen in the collapse of multiple empires, great empires throughout history. A few here I was kind of looking at. It says the Romans, you know, ancient Rome. The Romans were a very religious, pious people who believed in honoring their ancestors and tradition. They also cherished courage, honesty, and duty, and their convictions were key to their rise as a culture. These virtues sound particularly like George Washington, whom contemporaries regularly compared to ancient Roman leaders. And today remains the ideal of a leader. And then they go down this thing and they basically talk about, you know, the increase in self governance and self absorption, where all you care about is you and your rights, and you fight for your rights, and you don't look. You know, I talked a while ago about the 14th Amendment that basically says if any of these doctrines or Bill of Rights offends any other right, it's not meant to do that. And any estate law that impacts a person's civil rights is not meant to do that. The entire spirit of the law, the spirit of the Bill of Rights, is the betterment of society. It's not so you can exercise your free will in violation of another person's civil rights. And that is the epitome of self-centeredness. And up above, when it was talking about this very religious, pious people who honored their ancestors and tradition, in 2 Timothy 3, where it talks about, that they have the appearance of religion but deny the power thereof, or spirituality, God, whatever. They're pious. And this is what we're seeing in our society, is this piety. And this number three was cronyism, intrinsic to Roman society were client-patron relationships in which a wealthy and powerful men did favors to less wealthy and powerful men in exchange for their loyalty, votes, and service. Think of it as somewhat like the Italian mafia or, guess what, U.S. Congress. You see these congressional leaders, congresspeople, open the border up, bring them in, let them come on in. Hey, we'll give you free stuff, just vote for us. This is absolutely, they're just giving away. It's not their money, and it's your money. If you're a taxpayer, they're giving away your money. They're using your money to, well, they're attempting to, they're promising to. And it says, I was talking to a friend last night, and I was like, when I was in D.C., Google has a huge office there, a huge building, like a 6-story, very massive building. And they spend $1.4 billion a year on lobbying. What do you do with $1.4 billion a year? $1.4 billion to lobby. Those are bribes. They're paying people off. The CEO of Google visited the White House 408 times during Obama's two-term reign. What was it? And then they would scrub everything to do with Obama. I mean, anything bad or negative. And he would tell him. He had research specialists. Obama had two ladies that would filter all of his television that made sure that he was not offended and did not ever see anything that shined him in a bad light. And he would have all this stuff off the web scrubbed. And I mean, you talk about arrogance. That's the power that these people get. The Clintons entered office with a net worth of zilch, basically. They're now worth way, way over $300 million. Just out of their Clinton fund, they're worth over $300 million plus. Obama entered office worth $800,000, and that was primarily a house that he had in Chicago that had been given to him, which he would never say who gave it to him. And when he left office, he was worth $60 million. He claimed he was only worth $20-some million. How do you go into office at 800 grand and come out at even 20-some million, even though the real number was 60? Who gave him the money? Where did it come from? He said, oh, just good investment guidance. I mean, we can go down the list. The Bushes, they're no better. George Bush left. He did the prescription drug bill, among, I'm sure, many other things. And he left office with honorary board positions with Pfizer and Merck. The drug bill costs us $385 billion a year. That they would no longer negotiate with Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, on generic drugs or drug prices on the name brand stuff. So these pharmaceutical companies made a fortune. This all took place right after Consumers Reports and another advocacy group tried to pass laws limiting what pharmaceutical companies could charge, saying that they could only charge 1,000 times their research and development projected out over 10 years on a yearly basis, basically. In other words, they could make 1,000 times their R&D a year. That was their excuse for their overcharging for drugs. Well, they were making multiple millions and millions of times their investment per year. They fought that thing to death. Merck and Pfizer flew people all over the world. They did all this stuff. The original, pre-vote census was like 37% against and 57% for. By the time it got to vote, it was like the opposite, like 38% for and 60% against or something like that. But the bottom line is they manipulated everybody. They bribed them. They influenced them in an improper way. Our system, people, you get the left, they're like, we need to get corporations out of politics money. Well, or PACs. Those are political action groups or corporations, and they, you know, that's where an independent company goes out and posts ads for or against certain politicians. Well, the problem is it's freedom of speech. And the other problem is they want to get rid of all that stuff, but they want to leave unions in there. Well, unions are the worst of all because people involuntarily give their money. They don't have a choice. And it's been taken to court time and again and proven that they don't, these people don't have to give their money into unions. And they can do it of their choice, of their own free volition, but the unions keep demanding it, and if they don't do it, they get fired. And, you know, every 4 or 5 years, it goes back to court, and the unions lose every time, and they just keep doing it. And these people are stuck. People that are in school systems and things like that, their money is being used to propagate morality that's completely contrary to their own. And there's alternative unions, but they just don't have the pull. They don't have the money. They just, they don't have the simplicity that of, you know, the government-backed unions is what they are. Of course, Obama worked with them hand in hand, and, you know, he wanted to tear this country down, and it's coming. I mean, you look at the division in this country since he got into office. It's unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. And then that article mentions Antifa. I mean, these guys are absolute lunatics. They're supposedly anti-fascist. They don't even know what that means. Fascism is where the government governs and controls and owns all property, essentially. You know, Venezuela, Indonesia, these are countries where, you know, Caterpillar was seized by the owner of Indonesia and given to his son to run. Well, you think that worked out? I mean, do you think Caterpillar continued to provide product? Of course not. In Venezuela, they, you know, they froze up Gold Reserve, a company out of northern Idaho that was a huge mining company operation. They'd prepped a whole mountain with Venezuela's assistance and permission to mine probably the largest silver mountain in the world after the Comstock lode. And right when they got under operations and put massive hundreds of millions into it, Venezuela seized it. Chavez, I think, was his name. And you know, again, did it work out? No, because they don't have any support on the outside. That's not how business works. People want to say capitalism is so evil and rotten. It's not capitalism. It's corruption that's the problem. The government does need to do some regulation. That's where you get this antitrust stuff. It's like William A. Clark, the big copper baron, said, "I've never met a man I cannot buy." And then he proceeded to say, "You just need to know the price." And essentially what he's saying is everybody's got their hot button. And, you know, one guy, it might be females. Another guy, it might be money. Another guy, it might be land or timber. And another guy, it might be women. I mean, it's what the guy's saying. And who knows? You know, maybe we are that bad. But hopefully, as believers, there's not a price you can buy us with. He had a deal where everyone who voted for him got like a $5 gold piece and a drink. And, you know, they had, I think, 20,000 more votes than there were citizens in Clark County. Pretty interesting. So they say, so we've talked about this client patron, relationship, which is, lobbyists in our country. They have a volunteer army. Initially, Romans fought not because they were mercenaries, but to defend home and hearth. That gradually changed as the Roman Empire grew and needed increasing numbers of soldiers to maintain control, which eventually led to the military becoming a political player through a consistency that demanded more favors and began throwing support behind their generals as political leaders. And then it goes on from trouble from warfare between the elites and commoners, which is basically what the left is pushing. That's not a really good article, to be honest with you. There's a lot better breakdowns and stuff. I just grabbed something off the web and was looking at it. But there's a lot more I've had in the past, and I didn't really prepare myself that much. But, you know, the bottom line is it's the sexual immorality, orgies and gluttony and all these things. Even Paul talks about the gluttony and the meat eaters, which to us is like, what? We eat meat, you know, and people are becoming more vegetarian now. But you know, it was a certain lifestyle, and the people, they just drank and ate meat, and they were just, you know, that was the rich. It was totally inappropriate back then to be fat. When he talks about gluttony and gluttonous, it's referring to fat. I mean, That was absolutely unacceptable back then. It was considered slothful, wasteful, a lack of self-control, you know, which is one of the fruits of the spirit, you know, one of the seven deadly sins, etc. And the only people that were kind of accepted to be fat were the uber rich. You know, and you go all the way back to Daniel, the king's rich diet, you know, and it was such a good diet. Well, Daniel's like, I'm not eating that stuff. I'm eating the, you know, God's diet, basically. And I'm not a vegetarian, don't get me wrong, but there's sensibility to it, obviously. If it worked for Daniel, it would probably work for us if we had more in-depth information. But people don't realize the Jews were generally vegetarians until, you know, I mean, you read their word, and it's pretty easy to figure out there's a lot of meat they can't eat. And it's pretty simplified that way. But in general, you know, we've become just this gluttonous nation. We've got obesity. We just feed our flesh. We're not a spiritual nation. I've discussed recently our founding fathers' quotes on morality, you know, over and over. There's so much of this stuff that's so important to us. You know, the foundation of national morality must be laid in private families, says John Adams. How is it possible that children can have any just sense of the sacred obligations of morality or religion if, from their earliest infancy, they learn their mothers live in habitual infidelity to their fathers and their fathers in as constant infidelity to their mothers, is what, you know, John Adams says. And you go down and there's tons of quotes from him. George Washington: the foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality, and the preeminence of free government be exemplified by all the attributes which can win the affections of its citizens and command the respect of the world. And on, you know, on, okay, George Washington: 'tis substantially true, I love this guy, that virtue or morality is the necessary spring of popular government. The rule indeed extends with more or less force to every species of free government. That again, that's George Washington again, Samuel Adams. If we continue to be a happy people, that happiness must be assured by the enacting and executing of reasonable and wise laws expressed in the plainest language and by establishing such modes of education as tend to include the minds of youth, the feelings and habits of piety, religion, and morality, and lead them to the knowledge and love of those truly godly republican principles upon which our civil institutions are founded. Godly republican principles. So, you know, the republican principle going all the way back is based, like I said, government by God. That was what we were built on. And, you know, the socialist Democrats, they have you go to the Democrat website and they have a link to the Democratic Socialists. They're all inclusive and they're moving. They're running to the left. They're bouncing off the left wall. Thomas Jefferson: I know but one code of morality for men, whether acting singly or collectively. He who says, I will be a rouge when I act in company with 100 others, but an honest man when I act alone, will be believed in former assertion, but not in the latter. If the morality of one man produces a just line of conduct in him, acting individually, why should not the morality of 100 men produce a just line of conduct in them acting together? In other words, you know, why, if men are moral individually, why when they get together, you know, should we allow corruption and immorality in our government, essentially, is what he's saying. And I agree. I mean, we've let stuff go so far because any man can be bought off, I suppose. You know, you've got all this stuff and we're heading that way. You look at the Bible on sexual immorality, you know, flee, 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body. Sexually immoral person sins against his own body. You know, and then Hebrews 13 talks about, let marriage be held in honor among all. Let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. And, it, you know, 1 Thess 4:3, for this is the will of God, your sanctification, you abstain from sexual immorality, and that each of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. And then Matthew 5, but I say to you, 28, that is with Jesus, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust, you know, has already committed adultery. And on and on. Ephesians 5, sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not be named among you. Galatians 5, 19, now the works of the flesh are evident, sexual immorality, etc. You know, and it you know, the Bible's very clear on this. And this is what is happening in our nation. This is, we're glorifying, by turning the other cheek, we're glorifying this stuff. And, you know, there's a psychology psychologists, psychiatrists will tell you, an abusive husband or an abusive person will amp up or raise the level of vitriol and even violence and anger to control others. So somebody in that kind of an environment with a very unhealthy controlling person, they'll keep rising and rising and rising to an absolute level of disrespect, anger, complete lack of self-control. It's about control. And this is what, like, Antifa and all these groups, even these queer theory groups, they scream and yell. And, you know, people, it's not, we don't have the energy. We don't want to engage in this stuff. We avoid it because we think we have better things to do with our lives. They say that all that's necessary for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And that is the discomfort zone. That's where it doesn't matter whether you want to or not. You are called to. God calls us to stand up for truth and righteousness. It is not a question. Which commandment by God in the Bible says, if you want to obey this commandment? None. I mean, he calls us out. We've got to be ready to defend ourselves at any time. Jesus even said it. I cover it in the last show. I mean, we've got to be ready to defend ourselves physically, as a our family and whatnot. And we've got to be able to defend our faith. And we need to know facts and details. He says, be prepared, you know, to make a defense for your faith at any time, all the time. We've got, you know, we do have to fight for the world. We've got to fight because it's our domain. There's multiple parables of Jesus giving about the master in the vineyard. Well, those are very obviously about us and the earth. He leaves for a long time and he comes back and he judges us based on numerous things. What do we do with the vineyard? What do we do with our talents? You know, what do we do with what he gave us, essentially? So we have responsibility. If we yield it all over and people go, I've literally heard people say, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to be here anyway. I'm going to be raptured out. I mean, do you really think that's a good attitude? Do you think that's what God's calling you to do? Is, you know, oh, I'm not concerned with the cares of this world. You know, I'm concerned just with spiritual things. Well, this is spiritual. It's about as spiritual as you can get when God says in his word over and over and over, you know, sexual immorality. Every other sin that you commit is outside the body, but the sexual immoral person sins against his own body. It is in his spirit. It's in his flesh. It's just pure evil, and it is the root of the demise. This is why they want to recruit children. That's what these drag queens are doing. I mean, it's disgusting. I don't see where that would ever be appealing at all, but they're, you know, maybe they're just numbing them out, anesthetizing them to the concept so they become tolerant and accepting and embrace the idea of this perversion. I don't know, but I do know that they do recruit. They used to have NAMBLA, was North American Man Boy Love Association. They literally had lobbyists that were lobbying to remove the difference between minors and adults so that these homosexual males could proselytize, technically, you know, young men, and you get the picture. It's pretty gross. It's pretty bad. It's very sinful, and it's all taken its toll. We've become numb to it. We've become accepting. We've become, oh, we're supposed to accept homosexuality now. And you know, I've watched the conservative movement go from against gay marriage to pro-gay marriage. Now, pro-homosexual union, okay, people have every right to do what they want with their own body. Doesn't mean they're morally right, but they have a right. It's a gay union. It's not a marriage. The word marriage is a biblical term. And that's the trick. God does weird things in my life, and I had a gal who was one of the national leaders of the gay marriage movement come into my shop, and she was from San Francisco, and she had a relative die up here. And I couldn't believe it. I'd seen her on TV, and she came into my shop, and we had a conversation. I never let her know my beliefs. She probably, well, obviously didn't know her. She wouldn't have been in here. But she, I said to her, why the word? I acted like, I just didn't give her any indication. I said, why the word? Why not just get a different word? No, it's the word we want, she said. It's about the word marriage. That's what it's about. And she was right on the money. It was a spiritual attack to seize the word marriage, to destroy what God had created. As I've said, the devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy. It wasn't about the rights of freedom to homosexuals. The problem is, too, the suicide rate among transgenders is the highest of any group in the nation. And even after they have their surgeries and everything, it remains extremely high. I mean, it's like suicide attempts and completed acts is like 40% among transgenders. They're miserable. And so they're told the reason you're unhappy is because society won't accept you the way you are, so you have to change society. Well, no, that's not – that's the exact opposite of the Bible. The Bible says you need to change yourself to change the world. You don't change the world first. You change you first, and you pray and let God do the rest. And yet they're coming at it from a fleshly position. They are deceived. We do need to pray for them. But they are vile and vicious, and spiritual battles become that way. The devil, again, steal, kill, destroy. That's what he wants to do to you and me and our families. They want to, they want to just tear down and break down the family to the utmost extreme. And so, you know, as it's pretty obvious where I'm going with that. I don't think I have time to cover the one. I just kind of wanted to go over, well, there's a number of different scriptures on this stuff that I was going to cover, but I don't necessarily have that time. And so I think you know where I'm coming from. I think if each listener just takes a little time, educate yourself. Contact the appropriate individuals. Just search the web or, you know, go out and do some research on that stuff. You're going to find phone numbers and people to contact that you can actually make a difference. Activistmommy.com. Search in Google. The Queer Caliphate is one. You've got, there's a few others. Daily Wire had a little bit on it here. Activistmommy.com seems to have all of it. So you can look up all this stuff on drag queens, Spokane Library, drag queen. You can search that, Queer Caliphate. And then I was, from that article, those articles, they have links to other articles. And just, you know, they have information in there on who you can contact. And I think it's important to just get out there and put the pressure on them. Do your thing. Make your voice heard. You know, you're a voider or a voter, not a voider. Anyway, that's what I would definitely encourage you to do. I'm trying to find the Daily Wire on that, which is Ben Shapiro, who's phenomenal. He's a genius. But anyway, so take the time, you know, prepare, get your knowledge together. Daily Caller. Here's a Daily Caller article. The Daily Caller has it, you know, that's on Facebook. It's all over the place. So just do some research. Contact, you know, the local. It's your taxpayer dollars going to this stuff. It's happening nationwide. Luckily, in Spokane, we've got protesters. We're a fairly conservative area. And then even pray for Matt Shea, you know, they're coming out with more articles bashing on him again, saying that he's trying to create an army of child warriors for God. And, you know, they take stuff out of context, or he speaks to a group that they don't agree with politically and they twist it. You know, there's nothing wrong. That's the other thing. They say, be tolerant, you know. And he goes out and he speaks to groups he may not even agree with. Do you have to agree with the group? That's what the media does to everybody. Why would you talk to him? Why would you talk to them? You don't agree with them. Well, who agrees with everybody on everything anyway? Oh, but they're a hate group. Well, how are you going to reach a hate group without talking to them? Because what they do is they isolate, polarize, and pulverize. That's the Saul Alinsky method. You make them, inhumane behavior and to create non-human, you know, perspectives. And then people destroy them and they show up at their houses at 3 a.m. and blare stuff and talk about killing them. And we've lost it. Antifa, I talked about, you should watch some of those protests if you want to call them. They're not protests. They're just gang beatings. They go just pound people and the cops won't stand up in these liberal cities. I've been watching this stuff too long. They won't even defend these people. And then they try to press charges. It's the most pathetic. And it's always the Democratic leadership. We just saw that standoff I talked about recently in Philadelphia. 6 cops were shot. And when they were bringing the guy out, or before they're bringing it out, there all these people showed up and started protesting and yelling and screaming at the cops and throwing stuff at them. I mean, what do they want? I mean, this is, they want anarchy, they think, but they don't know. These aren't the toughest tools in the shed. These guys, you know, they ban up because people are generally civil. And then you get, there's a group that just went to court. I can't remember the name of them. These guys that came out, Christian men, came out and fought against Antifa. Oh, they get arrested and hauled down and charged with all these crimes of assault. And Antifa walks away. They show up in masks. These guys allow them to come with masks and weapons. We've seen it all the way back from Charleston, South Carolina, you know, with the statues and being torn down. And, you know, and then they have, you know, they photo a small group of Nazis and or whatever they were, white supremacists, and that becomes what the whole thing's about. And then Trump says there was good people on both sides of the debate. Oh, now he's a Nazi. And I mean, this is the Saul Alinsky technique. So how long does it last? How far does it go? It doesn't stop. It never stops. So do we kick back and let them take over? I would hope not. So I just, again, I encourage you, do the right thing. Obviously, the world's changing rapidly. We're in the most interesting times that I can imagine in history, which means we're heading towards the end times rapidly. I, of course, believe strongly in owning precious metals, solid hard assets as a hedge. You got to do it. There's big changes coming. Our immorality, we're going to pay more economically, trust me. That's always the big way that God hits a society. So give us a call. Give us Google review, 5 stars, free silver dollar, 3 reviews. Google, Bing, and say Yelp, 2 silver dollars. Give us a call. Coins Plus, thanks for tuning in. God bless. Bye-bye.